Hi, welcome. I'm Dr. Roger Murphy. I'm the host of Freedom from Fibromyalgia Summit. Really happy that you're joining us today. And I'm really excited to have Dr. Keisha Ayers here, who is a board certified in functional medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, doctor of sexology, a trauma-informed psychotherapist, family practice advanced registered nurse practitioner with a specialty in integrative medicine. Keisha is highly sought after as a speaker because of her background. She's the author of a best-selling book, The Autoimmune Puzzle, and she's a TEDx presenter. She's really, as you can tell with her background, a wealth of information. So I'm really excited that you're joining us here today. And we're going to be talking a little bit about autoimmune disease, its connection with fibromyalgia and trauma. So thank you so much for being part of the summit.
Yeah, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I know one of your specialties, obviously, because of your book is autoimmune disease. And, you know, the smoking gun is out there. We just can't really put all the pieces together and say definitively that fibromyalgia is autoimmune disease. But there's a lot of practitioners that seem to believe that's kind of where we're eventually heading, is that fibromyalgia does have some type of autoimmune component. Do you think?
I'm one of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought so. We'd had a conversation before. You know, I'm not really sure about it, but it does certainly make sense. And I see with my patients, and I know you share with your patients, your clients, that a lot of times we see it run in families. Mm-hmm. So I think there's certainly a pattern there. So tell me a little bit about your thoughts on fibromyalgia and autoimmune disease.
Well, autoimmunity is simply us attacking ourselves. And so if we take it out of this realm of disease specific and just say, okay, so why is it that we're having pain? Why is it that we're having inflammation? What is the biochemical response? What's the mechanical response that's happening? And I find that there are, I call it the four P's of autoimmunity, and I find them present in people with fibromyalgia too. Yeah. Now, there are some characteristics with autoimmune disease that we can also point to with fibromyalgia that are, okay, 10 times more autoimmunity is diagnosed in women than men. Yeah. We find this with fibro too, right?
Yeah.
And these four P's that, you know, I highlight are the pitta dosha in Ayurvedic medicine, which means there's a lot of fire already present in the personality, tends to be type A driven kind of people. Perfectionism is the second P. Also people pleasing. I find that a lot of times the people that come to see me that are part of my patient population that have autoimmunity, fibromyalgia, have put themselves on the back burner of the stove in terms of caregiving. And there is a lot in front of them that they're tending to first, a lot of stuff boiling over, you know, and that it's like, I will get to me if I have to, or when I have time. And of course, time never arises until the body has upped the volume, right? Amped up. Like, okay, I can't do this anymore. Here's some pain that's going to be moving around in the body. You're not going to be able to, you know, I'm just tired. You need to actually pay attention to me. Yeah. And the fourth P is holding on to the poison of past pain, which is past trauma. And so those four are characteristics that I see in everyone with autoimmunity. And I definitely see it with fibro too. So I don't know if, you know, walks like a duck, talks like a duck.
Yeah. Right.
And the other thing, another little statistic about autoimmune disease is that once you have one, well, here are two statistics. Once you have one, you have a 75% chance of having another one. So oftentimes fibro is a comorbidity, as we call it in medicine, right? It's also present with something like Hashi's or Raynaud's or rosacea. People don't realize like rosacea and their cold hands and feet are actually an autoimmune issue. So, you know, the second statistic I wanted to kind of bring forward for us to evaluate is that in our culture, and this was definitely true for me, because when I was in my early 30s, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis and I reversed it within 6 months and it's never been back. But when I was diagnosed, it felt like it came on all of a sudden. Like one morning I woke up with 10 extra pounds of just red puffiness, inflammation all over my joints. Felt like someone had taken the batteries out of the Energizer bunny and I was flattened. So there's, you know, there are these similarities that we think of it as all of a sudden, but actually science tells us that it takes anywhere from 10 to 30 years to develop a full-blown autoimmune issue, as well as fibro. Fibro doesn't just come on overnight, even though it feels like it. It's just because finally the body has said, look, I've been trying to tell you for a, like when I look back, I had a good 20 years of different things that kept happening that I was silencing until finally RA got my attention, you know, and I sort of looked around and said, oh, is there like, you know, there's something I need to go research here, because my model of medicine that I've been born and raised and educated in isn't working for this. Like I got handed 2 prescriptions when I was diagnosed. Here's one for methotrexate. Here's one for a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. Come back when you get worse, not if you get worse, and we'll change your meds. So how often are people with fibro kind of given the same thing? Right. And, you know, when I said, well, hold on, is there anything else I can do besides this? You know, knowing the side effect profile of these drugs, I didn't want to take them. I'm very dedicated to my health. I make my own food. I run marathons. Is there anything else? I'm very disciplined. No, it's genetic. Because in the history taking process, she had asked, do you have a family history of autoimmunity? And my grandfather had rheumatoid arthritis. So therefore, this is genetic. This is it. That's the end of the story. Here are your meds. Come back when you're worse. Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, I'm 58 now. It's been almost 30 years since this happened. People are still getting the same messaging. No, it has nothing to do with your diet. No, you know, it's genetic. Therefore.
Yeah. Well, what we know with genetics is it's not written in stone. I mean, you have the opportunity to change that, you know, that dialogue, but you also are vulnerable. That's your weak link. Yes. And that fits so well with fibro is they're going along, they're living their lives, they're active, they're full-time, working full-time, they're doing, you know, they're really busy. And then something comes along that's the straw that breaks the camel's back. Yeah. They just can't rebound from it. And that's what we see with autoimmune, just what you've shared. I see that with my autoimmune patients. Is I had a patient here recently that I had treated her years ago with fibromyalgia, helped her overcome that. She'd been doing great. And then the last 2 years, she's been under a tremendous amount of stress. And lupus, now she's diagnosed with lupus. So now we're starting to work on that. But it was this 2 years of just agonizing stress that she'd been under.
Yeah.
Trauma, which you said is something that kind of weaves this thing together, right?
Yeah.
You find that trauma is a common condition that you see with autoimmune. And obviously I know we've agreed that it's a big thing with fibromyalgia.
You know, this is that fourth P that I was talking about, the holding onto the poison of past pain is trauma. And the thing that people, I just want to make a definition clear here, because oftentimes people think of trauma as what we define as capital T trauma, right? Domestic violence, sexual abuse, psychological, emotional neglect, having a parent that's addicted to a substance or incarcerated or mentally ill, you know, or dead. Like these are big capital T traumas. So sometimes people will think, well, I had a great childhood, therefore I don't have any trauma. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that every human goes through trauma in their childhood and beyond. And so trauma can be defined as any event that you don't feel equipped to handle. Hmm. Now, as children are, you know, there are thousands of those. And so in solving the autoimmune puzzle in my book, I talk about the fact that we are all different. There's no one fibromyalgia diet or MS diet or diet for rheumatoid arthritis, you know, or Hashi's diet that doesn't exist, that you say, here's the disease. And then here's a diet that will magically make it disappear. No, we have our own individual selves, which you can look at as an individual puzzle. And the way that I think about it is if you find a puzzle that you want to put together, you take the lid off the box and you dump all the pieces out on the table and you flip them all that over. You're looking for the four corners to start. So the four corners of really any chronic illness, whether we define it as autoimmune or not, is they're going to be the same. It can be obesity. It can be fibro. It can be any autoimmune issue. It could be cancer. So we flip these corner pieces over that we're looking for, and one of them will be your genetics. We all have unique genetics. They're not the same. Yeah. So that's the first corner piece. The second corner piece is gut health. Everybody with autoimmunity has leaky gut.
Yeah.
And I would say probably the same thing about fibro.
Yeah.
And so it's very common, you know, that, I mean, that's it, right? So then, and that will include your microbiome. It'll include how well you're doing at producing your own stomach acid and digestive enzymes. You know, like this is how, what kind of foods are you triggering against? What is your immune system getting riled up about? The third corner piece of the puzzle will be toxins. So your toxic burden and your body's willingness and ability to get rid of those toxins. Now, we live in the most toxic environment we've ever lived in as humans. We've really messed up our nest. And so, you know, there are tens of thousands of chemicals that are being, that we're exposed to all the time in our air, water, and soil, no matter how careful we are. So we have that toxic load that's there. And then the fourth corner piece of the puzzle is trauma. And I think about trauma always as the missing piece of the puzzle. And it does tie all autoimmunity and chronic illness together. Because if you think about it, like you were just saying about your, you know, your patient who went through 2 years of relentless stress.
Yeah.
Well, that stress, right, is actually not what caused the problem. I always, you know, I teach for the Institute for Functional Medicine. I teach doctors what we're talking about here. And I'm always on the stage saying to them, quit telling your patients to reduce their stress. Because here you're talking to people who maybe have a special needs child or elderly care, you know, elderly parent they're caregiving or a job they really love or a divorce they're going through. Like they can't change those things that I'm mentioning, right? Or they have a chronic illness, which in and of itself becomes a stress.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes they don't feel safe in their own bodies. And what are they going to do about that, right? And if you just say reduce your stress, that's not giving them the journey through feeling safe in their own body. It's telling them they're doing something wrong. So what you have to do is say, change your relationship to your stress, your perception about your life events and you in them. So the way that we perceive and the way our nervous system patterns go off when we get our buttons pushed that we call stress are developed in childhood. They're unconscious until we make them conscious. And so something like fibro, something like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis did it for me, you know, are these big events that hopefully get our attention, cause us to sit back and go, okay, like something I'm doing is not working here.
Yeah.
Let me really investigate. And part of the investigation isn't just what I'm eating or what I'm taking as far as supplement protocols, but also the way my own mind works. Yeah. You know, hopefully people get there, right? Like just because I have this thought, does that make it true or worthwhile keeping and repeating? And I don't know who counts this, but apparently 94% of our thoughts that we have every day, we've already had them. They're a pattern, a looping, a rumination. And so we get to go in when we have an adult brain developed, which happens around the age of 26. Up until that time, we don't have this prefrontal cortex developed yet. We're operating mostly from that amygdala, limbic system. Am I okay? Am I going to survive? You know, am I accepted in the tribe? So biologically, we know that if we're not accepted in the tribe in tribal days, and we're put on the outside of the firelight circle for something that we did, said, or stood for, the saber-toothed tiger can eat us. So there's a very big desire for children all the way through until they start to learn how to become authentic beings, to conform, to look like everyone else, to be like everybody else, right? And so trauma is going to happen in ways where you feel afraid that you're going to get rejected.
Yeah.
You are going to find that in any DSM-5 manual on psychology and mood disorders and, you know, pathologizing the way that our minds work. But unfortunately, that lack of recognition of the patterns we develop in childhood are making us sick.
Yeah.
Autoimmune disease is the highest occurring chronic illness that we have in the world today.
Yeah.
And the lack of really investigating this is part of it. Like my goodness, what are the patterns of my own mind that I trigger, right? And so what Ayurvedic medicine says, which I love, because when I learned that, it was shortly after my diagnosis, I was looking for answers outside my medical model. And I discovered yoga and Ayurveda and meditation. And this 10,000-year-old sister science of yoga said, oh, the body is the canvas of the mind. And so if we're hypervigilant and hyperreactive mentally, our immune system follows suit.
Yeah.
Our mast cells follow suit. Our microglia in our brain follow suit. So all of this is activated by our own mental patterns, our own perceptions. If you think that you are going to get rejected, you're afraid of rejection still as an adult, then you're activating a very primal response that sends your body off to the circus in the sympathetic nervous system arousal. And it really doesn't have anything to do probably with what reality is.
Yeah.
So these are the things that are that tie-in.
Yeah. And this really goes hand in hand with so many other speakers, what we've shared, what's been shared on here already, the lack of neuroplasticity. A lot of folks, we've talked about this neuroplasticity. We know with fibromyalgia that oftentimes they come from a traumatic childhood.
Yeah.
And it can be the big T, as you said, but it can be a smaller T. It could be that you had an illness when you were in adolescent. It could have been you traveled because you were in a military family. I mean, it's all kind
That's one of mine. Yeah.
You know, that you have trauma, but this, you know, this stays with you. And then it becomes, when someone tells you that you need to de-stress, well, I mean, there's techniques for that, but really, ideally, everybody needs to realize you're going to be under stress. That's sometimes
part of life.
Yeah, stress sometimes is a good thing. It gets you up out of bed and off to work. I mean, it's not a terrible thing, but it can certainly get out of control. And with fibromyalgia, we know a lot of times that individuals, because they were under a lot of stress as a child, as they go through adulthood, they don't have that ability to rebound from stress. They get under an illness, a surgery, something comes along, and they start to developing these symptoms. Before you know it, after seeing several doctors and ruling out everything else,
going on many antidepressants.
Now they say you got fibromyalgia, and then they tell you just learn to live with it, right?
Yeah.
But I say that you brought this up about these personalities. So when someone asked me about fibromyalgia, I say, well, you know, usually the people that I see are the type A's. They're the doers. They do.
Oftentimes for others. Yeah.
And then they're done out, right? Or they're the caregiver. The caregiver. Yeah. You mentioned the caregiver. So they give and 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 they give. And then one day they're giving out. That's it. They can't give anymore.
Right.
And oftentimes they've depleted hormones and nutrients that they need to be able to handle stress. Now they become more vulnerable to stress. And that's a really a vicious cycle that they get on that hamster wheel. It's hard to get off.
Yeah. The thing that I think gets missed in that, which I think is so important, like let's define the hamster wheel. It's a very vicious cycle. And it happens with fibro. It happens with everyone with autoimmunity that I've ever met, including myself, is that once you perceive yourself as somehow like overwhelmed, not keeping up, not doing, you know, whatever you've tied your worth to, if it's external, like achievement, success in various ways, good mom, good wife, good lawyer, good doctor, good, you know, whatever it is that you have as this, I'm worthwhile if this happens, you know, those fluctuate like the wind, right? So if you've externalized your worth, then that's first sign of trouble. You're going to struggle and there's going to be suffering in there. So then your perceptions that are going off, whether, you know, am I worthwhile? Am I doing okay? Am I achieving my goals? Then you're setting up this activation of what we just were talking about. So you activate your adrenal glands, release of cortisol gets out into the system so that you can flee from the lion that you believe is on your tail, or fight it, or freeze.
Yeah.
And then that's supposed to happen in just a short period of time, you recover.
Right.
We can do it in perpetuity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that cortisol then starts breaking down the gut, which is, you know, so there's the trauma, the one corner piece of the puzzle I was talking about, right? That activates your perceptions, activated by your perceptions. Now you're breaking down the gut, which is that second corner piece I talked about. Now you're becoming intolerant to your foods and your environment. right? More and more intolerant. And also people, you know, a lot of people that have fibro are highly sensitive people.
Yeah.
You know, they actually take the quiz online. They go, oh, this explains everything for me. I'm a highly sensitive person. Mm-hmm. Well, of course you are. You know, this is everybody with trauma winds up being HSP, highly intuitive, empathetic, empathic. That doesn't then explain away. It says, yes, this is where you landed because of life experience, your particular makeup, your personality structure. And here's what's happening as a result. And so you can't expect the whole world to accommodate your sensitivities, right? So this is where you learn how to build resilience inside of yourself. It's like the wake up call. Oh, I am a highly sensitive person. I need to actually build in some resilience. So that as that gut's breaking down, though, it makes it harder and harder because now you're intolerant to the food you're eating, to the environment you're in, you can't travel anymore. People are really getting to you. You're considering a lot of the community or spouse or parents that you've been with are all now you're labeling narcissistic and you've got with them and it's a toxic relationship. And so there's like this repetitive cycling that happens in that ruminating thought process, which keeps all of this going, right? And now the gut leaky gut leads to leaky brain. So now there's mood disorders, insomnia, right? Brain fog, can't remember anything for the life of you, where you used to have a steel trap mind because you are that really great driven person that wants to be of service to the world. And where is it all going, right? Well, all that, the body and its wisdom knows that if it can't keep you alive, you're certainly not allowed to reproduce, and your digestive system is going to shut down so that you can't be, you know, if you're being chased by a lion, you can't stop and have bowel movement. And so your hormones that are supposed to make you feel good and feel resilient are getting co-opted to make cortisol. Yeah. That you keep triggering into your own system. Yeah. And so now you're estrogen dominant, whether you're male or female. And estrogen dominance is one of the classic risk factors for fibro and autoimmune disease and cancers of various sorts. So it just makes, like, as you said, the hamster wheel, but it's just so vicious, right? Yeah. It's this vicious cycle. And then now you're permeable to the toxins in your environment. They stay put. They go out in front of your nervous system, make everything worse. And so people will say, well, it's because of mercury, or it's because of my toxic relationship, or it's because of, and it's actually not. It's because of our perceptions of all of that. So when we really learn how to heal that small part of us that was victimized in some way. And that's where I really go with my patients. Like, let's go there quickly and learn how to securely attach to your own inner core that's so much larger than what's in your body even, right? It's like this vast consciousness that you are, your own luminous nature, you know, or we could call it Christ consciousness. You can call it your Buddha nature that's said in different ways in different religions. That it's like, that's that part of you that can't be hurt. And so learning how to securely attach to that one. I had insecure attachment disorder. You know, I got with a narcissistic abusive partner for sure. You know, I had sexual abuse when I was 10 years old. All this led to my RA. And my healing has been in being able to heal the perceptions that trigger my nervous system responses that were created when I was a child, so that I don't send cortisol into my system, break down my gut wall, have food sensitivities, upregulate genetics that have on them breast cancer and rheumatoid arthritis, both of which I've had and been able to reverse without medication, doing what we're talking about. Yeah. It's hard work, but it's so rewarding. And you actually learn like compassion for yourself. Right? You learn how to put your sense of worth internal instead of external, which, by the way, is one of the developmental stages we're supposed to achieve in adolescence, bringing your locus of control from external to internal. But because we're not really taught that in a conscious way, we kind of stumble around into it when we're adults by oftentimes getting sick.
Yeah. You know, but I think what oftentimes happens is these individuals or just living this busy life, they're carrying on, everything's going well, but then they get under some type of stress And then they can't get out of it. So, but, I talk about, we're all born with a stress coping savings account. Yeah. And in that stress coping savings account, we have certain chemicals, hormones, vitamins, minerals, amino acids that allow us to deal with stress. All day long, we're, you know, exposed to stimuli that it can be conceived as stressful or yeah. in real life stress, real or imagined. And so we're releasing these hormones and chemicals to deal with it. But if we're not careful, we can bankrupt those chemicals. And now mm-hmm. we're just incredibly vulnerable because the stress becomes so magnified that you're always feel that way. And this is classic fibromyalgia. We feel wired and tired. You just feel yeah. overwhelmed. And oftentimes, you know, you become kind of a hermit. You don't even want to go out because you can't handle any kind of stress or any kind of stimulation. It's too much. Yeah. And you shut down. And when that happens, your body's shutting down. So then that introduces this whole thing, the cell danger theory, survival paradox, where the body feels like it's under assault. And sure enough, everything shuts down and we start to see the classic signs of disease, mm-hmm. you know, more stress, and stress is the catalyst, and inflammation, which is the other catalyst of right. most every disease, right?
Mm-hmm.
Given trauma, we know so many patients, and surveys show that 70% of people who get diagnosed with fibromyalgia say that stress was a trigger for the fibromyalgia. They can look back.
Yeah.
What are some of the steps we can do to go back and figure out what was it that was traumatic in our life, in our childhood or adolescence? And then what are some of the steps we can take to start to correct that stinking thinking that where you get in the maze and you have this negativity, you just can't get out.
Yeah. So I'll give you an easy thing that I usually start people with, and then I'll also give sort of the overview. In 2013, I conducted a study called the Healing Unresolved Trauma Study. And from that, there's a model called the HURT model that goes through and talks about just what we said. So the stinking thinking, right?
Yeah. Zig Ziglar. Yeah.
Yeah. It starts when we're children with that initial hurt, and then we have an emotion that gets attached to it. And then from that feeling that's in the body, it stimulates the sympathetic nervous system arousal. Now we always say fight, flight, freeze, faint, but actually for children, it's always freeze. We don't have autonomy in childhood. So we're not fighting, we're not fleeing, you know, we're not fainting, we're usually freezing. So we freeze that feeling into a specific area of the body. We go into that nervous system response and immediately create a meaning. And because we're kids with minds that aren't fully developed yet, right? We don't have that fully developed brain. We don't have life experience to be, and maybe probably not somebody right next to us to help us navigate what just happened. We're going to make up some sort of meaning that makes sense to the child mind at the time, right? So if we take my like 10-year-old sexual abuse, it's easy to track. So intercom goes off in the corner of my fifth grade classroom to call all of us to stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance or to make announcements, but I'm like Pavlov's dog. That's the same intercom that calls me every once in a while into the vice principal's office. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in that sexual abuse piece, he's telling me it's because I'm a bad kid. So I go into what I call panicked rabbit freeze every time the intercom goes off. So that's really deeply ingrained inside my system. And then the meaning I've attached to that is because I'm being told this is my fault, I'm a bad kid, I'm going to link a behavior to that really quickly also. It's called an adaptive behavior for whatever your meaning is that you just created in response to this nervous system arousal and this feeling. So for me, it was, okay, if I'm bad and this is what's happening, then I need to be perfect if I'm going to survive this. And so there goes perfectionism as my adaptive behavior. So that's what's called an initial hurt loop. Okay. That's where it gets created, your nervous system pathway tracking what you believe about it. Then the model bifurcates. And on one side, it says in the middle of the next loop, it's a maladaptive memory processing loop. It's where you do the same thing over and over and over again. And it leads to disease. You have rumination on automatic negative thoughts. Every time you have the same feeling that you had in that initial hurt loop, you make up the same meaning about it. and you do the same behavior, and that leads to disease.
Yeah.
On the other side, when you finally kind of go, oh, the middle of that looping says willingness to self-confront with compassionate curiosity. Like, that's what I realized when I was learning how to meditate. I looked at the word autoimmune and said, auto means I'm doing this to myself. Okay. I'm kind of like killing myself in a societally acceptable way. Is there a time when I wanted to die? And I started going back with some curiosity about that, because it certainly wasn't true in that period of time at all. Mm-hmm. And I found this 10-year-old girl, and I said, oh, she did want off the planet. And okay, I remember trying to tell people about this, and I didn't have the right words, mm-hmm. and I kept getting sent back to school. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can see where, okay, every time I'm upset that my perfectionism is being questioned in some way by myself, I'm going into the same loop process. Yeah. And so that willingness to self-confront and say, every time I'm unhappy, I'm present. Maybe I have something to do with it. Yeah. Is that first step, right? Okay. Oh, maybe there's some responsibility here I need to take for my own way my mind works. And so there are a few steps on that adaptive memory processing. And so that first step, when you say, is there anything that we can do? You don't have to know what events happened that create your adaptive behaviors that are now maladaptive oftentimes in adulthood. If you have a bad day, right? And your impulse is to reach for something sugary with dairy, maybe ice cream or, you know, I don't know, name it, whatever it is, gluten-filled chocolate, a glass of wine, you know, then that's a maladaptive behavior for self-soothing. Hmm. It's not healthy. It right. doesn't solve anything, and is making you sick. Yeah. So then you look at your behavior without having to go find your trigger. And so you go, okay, so every time I'm reaching for a glass of wine, or every time I go online shopping and I have a problem with online shopping, I'm noticing because my credit card's too high. So maybe this is a maladaptive behavior I have to make myself feel good. Or every time I, whatever it is, you fill in the blank. It's not creating peace in my life, this behavior. It's just some sort of self-medicating I'm doing.
Yeah.
Or if you're a workaholic and you spend long, long, long hours working, right, you eventually do realize like this is not a sustainable method of being happy, and it definitely doesn't bring peace. Look at those, find them in your life. Be really, really courageous about that. You know, this is the willingness to compassionately self-confront with curiosity. Like, okay, where are these behaviors? And so in the hurt model, the behavior is the adaptive linking to a meaning you created. So when you reach for that thing that you've just realized is not health promoting, it's actually making you sick, go to what is the feeling that's in your body and the thought in your mind when you do it. Because what happens, Tibetan Buddhism calls this lazy mind. So, and what we want to develop is awake awareness, where we stay awake to our thought processes before we actually engage in an activity. So if you find yourself kind of blipping out and you come to awareness and you've just downed a whole bag of Doritos while you binge watch 4 episodes of your favorite Netflix show, and now you feel shame and guilt and you're just like, I'm just going to go to bed now. You know, you've just found yourself in a maladaptive behavior that is linked to something that had a feeling and a meaning before that happened that you went to sleep to. So you're starting to investigate, not looking for trauma, but looking for the places in your life that you are going to sleep to your own body. You're disassociating. You're not behaving in a collaborative camaraderie, like your body has wisdom to tell you. When your body hurts, it's trying to tell you something. It's part of your team. It's not against you, right? It's not unsafe to be in that body. That body is just beautifully conveying a message for you. And so when you want to get into, you know, out of that combative relationship with the body and get into a collaborative one, then you turn toward it and you say, oh, how can I support you better? What do you need from me? And that's where a lot of our functional medicine testing comes in, genetic testing, looking at some of these things and being super curious with compassion about what is the thought process that you had before you reached for that behavior. And so people are often really anxious about healing trauma because you're like, I don't want to go back and re-feel or reopen, or I don't even know, I don't have a memory of my childhood. That's okay. You don't need to. None of that stuff is actually even good to do. So I have a process I use with people, depending on where they're at, that, you know, it doesn't require that you go feel a bunch of pain again, or that you throw your parents under the bus, or that you blame anybody for, you know, where you're at. In fact, it's quite the opposite, right? That you're just really learning how to move into a compassionate, very collaborative relationship with all of you, your parts.
Well, I think that people kind of, they get it, like I mentioned earlier, the maze, they just can't get out. And that when they get in this, as you mentioned, it's a, you know, pain's a warning sign. It's a symptom that something's not right. And then ideally you're trying to figure out, okay, what is it that's causing this pain? Where's it coming from? What am I doing something that's causing me to have this pain? Am I not doing something that's causing me to have this pain? Do I need to be taking a supplement? Is there, am I need to change my diet? But most people kind of get locked into the feeling of the pain, and with fibromyalgia, they can't get out. And this is this, well, they're just thinking about, I'm in pain. And I totally understand. I mean, I'm not in any way demeaning that, because that's how most of us are, myself included. When I'm, you know, when I feel bad, it's hard to get out of that I feel bad mentality. But what you're offering, what you're sharing here with this, some of this approach to trauma, this past trauma, is a way to start to, number one, acknowledge that, that your thinking could be generating some of your, or certainly accelerating some of your symptoms. And by changing your thinking, you can oftentimes see improvement in your symptoms.
Well, I call what I do the freedom framework, because you can break free of all this. And, you know, people will say, sorry, what you're saying is this is all in my head. And I, you know, and that's always
be careful,
like,
yeah, because people, you know, you hear that with fibromyalgia. Oh, you're just lazy or crazy or red. You're
hypochondriac. And so, you know, hopefully people are tracking what I'm saying as the body the canvas, right? And that this was set up as patterning with genetics that are behind it. And so we learn how to turn off those genetics. We learn how to really, so it's with this, this, there's no blaming and shaming. It's not your fault. And there is not an it's all in your head messaging. It's that everything is always in our heads, you know, like that's the thing.
It's all connected.
It's all connected to the head. When we try and separate, like, oh, you're crazy, if it's because of what's happening here, that's totally wrong and abusive. And so, you know, the fact of the matter is our body's not separate from our mind, and it's our mind that actually sets up the body's response. And so it's learning how to become the master of your mind rather than your mind being master over you, and having all these unconscious things playing out, you know, like, I don't know, just something as simple as stopping drinking caffeine. If your genetics say you can't process caffeine, you know, that's, I live in Seattle. That's a big thing. People will, you know, will then project onto me that I'm somehow causing them some sort of distress. And I'm like, no, this is your body's asking you to not, you're not programmed to be able to metabolize caffeine. It's that simple. And so you can start noticing the gyrating that comes up in your mind of, oh, I'm deprived. My one vice, the good thing that's in my life, you know, and you start to learn how to reframe and shift that way of thinking. You know, it's like, oh, body, I hear you. I love you. And I only get one of you. And if you can't do caffeine, it's like driving your car into the filling station and then, you know, saying, why can't I put diesel in a car that is not made for diesel? You know, it's like, you don't do that. You say, okay, my owner's manual says, this is the kind of, I need unleaded gasoline and I need to put that in there. You don't yell about it. You don't feel deprived that your car can't have diesel. And we are actually, we have to take that emotion out of it. It's the same. It's the same. We have DNA that's programmed in a certain way, and we may not contain the enzymes genetically that we can break down gluten, that can actually handle sugar, that can handle alcohol, caffeine. All of this can be done with simple genetic testing to find out, like, yeah, what is it that is your genetic code for the kind of fuel that your body has been begging you to put in it your entire life. Yeah. So you start to notice, like, oh, I get really rebellious or resistant against that, and I want to project it outside of myself and feel victimized by that. And it's like, no, this is just like you getting into a collaborative relationship with your own self.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for being so courageous and sharing your story. It's quite, you know, quite the traumatic childhood. I can't even imagine. But it's a, unfortunately, sadly, it's a common denominator in the patients that I work with fibromyalgia. Too often, you know, once is too often. But, and a lot of this is in your book. So I want to make sure that I mention your book too, Solving the Autoimmune Puzzle. And I've got it sitting up here on the bookshelf. I meant to have it here sitting up here, but you
it's
go
behind
over
me right here too.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
Yeah.
So Keisha does a wonderful job of really kind of sharing this in a way that's very understandable. It can be intimidating, a little overwhelming when you are listening to it. And so many of us, myself included, really focus more on the biochemistry. And now we're realizing, you know, this whole body-mind connection is where medicine is really moving towards. I mean, that's where we're going, have been. We're been, you know, kicking and screaming, we're heading that way.
Yes.
But it's people like you that have been doing this for over a decade, and really putting your mark on this research and this whole new paradigm that we have to look at to really be able to heal ourselves, getting to heal our patients. So now, what's the best website for them to go to? Because I want them to go and learn more about you and your work, and definitely check out your book.
DrKeisha.com, DrKeisha.com. Yeah.
Simple. Well, I really enjoyed this. I know for some people, this can be a little bit intimidating, because you're thinking, oh my gosh, I got to go back and think about my upbringing and all the trauma that happened and the stress.
You don't.
She just shared with you. So this resonates with you. Definitely go to the website and drkeisha.com and learn more. So thank you so much for being part of the summit. This has been
great.
Thank
you. Bye, everybody.